Today, I began a series of revisitations of broadcasts that I've had that have to do with intimacy, our relationships with our special someone. This first one is going to feature a conversation I had with Dr. David Ludden, who talked about intimate relationships with a focus on restorative justice. Hello, everyone, and how are you doing? Got a question for you all. Have you ever been in love? Are you in love right now? Have you ever been disappointed by the one you love? Have you actually been just downright hurt by the one you love? How did you react? How did you want to react? Did you want them to feel pain for having caused you to go through what you went through? Our guest, Dr. David Ludden, is going to talk with us about intimate relationships, but the focus is going to be on forgiveness and restorative justice. Sound like something that you're interested in? How many of us can escape pain in relationships? Not many. So we may want to be in on this. Dr. Ludden is professor of psychology at Georgia Gwinnett College, and he received his PhD in cognitive psychology from the University of Iowa. He's author of The Psychology of Language, an Integrated Approach. Dr. Ludden, it is great to have you on with us. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I tell you what, it is truly my pleasure and honor. I have been looking forward to this. I really place a lot of emphasis on intimate relationships because, of course, one of the program's goals is to help build us not only as individuals but also as families. So, of course, part of focus is couples.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's what that's what you're focusing on. Before we move into that, though, Dr. Ludden, we're looking at these relationships, how things sometimes go wrong, how we respond when things go wrong. Before we get there, could you share with us what was going on in the life of David Ludden that led you in the direction of psychology?
Ah, well, goodness, led me in the direction of psychology. I guess I've always been kind of curious about how people work. I think probably most people who are in this field have sort of a curiosity about how they work. You know, why do I behave the way that I do? And so I think that it's sort of curiosity about yourself, something that leads you into psychology. I think that's certainly the case with me as well, is I found that my career in psychology has sort of been a lifelong journey in trying to understand myself better.
And you mentioned that, if I'm not mistaken, when a person makes a decision to go into psychology, and particularly if they're going to work in the arena of counseling, a lot of times is the expectation that the person will, as a student, go through a lot of self-discovery, even when it comes to having others involved in the evaluation process?
Absolutely. I mean, that's absolutely right. It's through engaging with others and trying to help others that you learn more about yourself. And also it's the kind of the experiences that you get through life that then you can share with other people.
That said, Dr. Ludden, I got to ask you, when we're doing that, you know, we have other people who are, you know, kind of studying us closely. They're helping us evaluate ourselves, understand ourselves, discover ourselves.
Right.
What is it about that process that can make it somewhat scary or intimidating?
Well, maybe it can be frightening to find out about yourself, huh? maybe you may find that you have to change the way that you think. Change is a lot. Is probably a lot of what's scary about it. But I think you mentioned a really good point. If you're talking about therapy, and it really doesn't have to be necessarily kind of a formal therapy, but you know when you're getting help from a pastor, or when you're getting help from friends, or just in your social interactions with others, it really is a process of trying to understand yourself better. And as you understand yourself better, then that leads to changes in the way you lead your life that make your life more productive and happier.
So what are some of the things that kind of go you know, take us down the wrong path. There's something going on in our lives, and for whatever the reason, we're not really buying into the notion of working with someone who can help us discover what's really going on inside so that we can make the changes. What are some of the things that go on in our thinking, our attitude, et cetera, that make us reluctant or sometimes just downright unwilling to explore, you know, to participate in that exploratory process?
Well, there's an old joke I could share with you. The question is, how many light bulbs does it, no, sorry, didn't do that right. Let me try that again. How many psychologists does it take to change a light bulb? And the answer is just one, but the light bulb really has to want to change. I think that's the issue that we're getting at, right, is if you don't want to change, if you feel that life's going well enough for you, or at least you can handle it the way it is, you may be resistant to change. It's when you realize that you're not really getting as much out of life as you'd like to be getting out of it, that you know that it's time for change. And that's when you start to see the beginning of a willingness to, you know, do some self-exploration and maybe think about changing the way you behave, changing the way you think, changing the way you treat others. And until you're open to that, that possibility of changing yourself, you can be very resistant. A lot of people don't want to change. They just want to do the same old thing because that's easy.
And that's because on some level, they feel like they perceive that they're getting some kind of benefit and or pleasure out of being like they are?
It could be, or it could just be resistance to change and just the kind of a stubbornness. I'm maybe not happy, but I'm at least I know what to expect if I just keep doing things the same way. Sort of a rigidity, right? Of I don't want to change anything because at least if I do things the way I've always done them, then I have some idea what to expect. Mm. Sort of a fear of the unknown, I guess, is part of it. When you start exploring yourself, who knows what you're going to find?
Yes, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I imagine there are some people who are more or less willing than others to go find whatever's really there.
Right, that's right. Uh-huh. And coming to terms with that. We build up a kind of an idea of who we are, sort of a story we tell ourselves, which isn't necessarily true, but it's a story that we like to maintain. And if you really start looking at yourself, you begin to realize that story may not be true in all aspects, and maybe completely wrong in aspects as well. And that can be very threatening to find that out.
So
it's all about protecting our egos, I guess you could say.
I got you.
Yeah.
So that being the case, what do you recommend when it comes to, because again, as I mentioned at the top, we're going to be focusing on these intimate relationships. And I want to ask you what you find to be one of the best methods, one of the best ways for people to prepare themselves, you know, knowing that we're all going to have something that we need to work on because none of us is perfect. But that said, as we prepare to go into a relationship on one case, and that when I say relationship, eventually, you know, the thought is eventually we're going to marry. That's one scenario. Mm-hmm. Another scenario is the couple is already married and maybe they're newlyweds or they've only been married a short period of time. Third case, third scenario where the couple has been together for maybe 8 years or longer. They've been married a little while. Are there particularly different steps that should be taken in each of those scenarios for each member of that relationship to get themselves to a place where they are really in good shape? Far as dispositions, et cetera, to contribute something positive to the marriage?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question. One of the thoughts that came to mind as you were posing that question was, if you think back to, so if you've been in a relationship for a while, for example, if you think back to when your relationship was new and fresh and exciting and, you know, you're deeply in love, forgiveness came pretty easy then, didn't it? you know, your partner does things that you don't really like, but, you know, you just, overall, the relationship is just so wonderful that you can let those things go. And it's sort of as the relationship gets older, stresses pile up, various things happen, that we become less willing to forgive our partner than earlier in our relationship. And so I think one of the things we need to think back to is, why was it early in the relationship I was so willing to forgive? And now even little things can be really difficult.
So, wow. So is there work that would be recommended? Maybe I shouldn't use the word work. I don't know. But something that we should do to kind of help us prepare for marriage, particularly before we actually go to the altar?
Well, that's a good question. I think everybody approaches marriage with the assumption that you're going to live happily ever after. Why would you go to the altar with someone that you're absolutely certain you're going to be miserable with for the rest of your life? I think more, but that said, that does end up being the case for quite a few married couples. So I guess that's your question. Well, what do we do to prepare for that? I think probably the most important thing to consider here is to think about where you are right now and what you can do right now to make your life better, to make your relationship better, as opposed to thinking, well, what should I have done, you know, 10, 20 years ago to prepare for right now, because you can't change that. Think about where you are right now, what you can do right now to make things better. That's why I mentioned kind of thinking back to that earlier time when you were more willing to forgive little things that now, you know, really bother you. That can be a starting point there, is just think, well, why am I getting so upset when, you know, my spouse leaves dirty underwear on the floor or doesn't put the cap back on the toothpaste? Why does this bother me now when, you know, 10 years ago it was just a kind of little quirk of theirs and it didn't bother me that much?
So does some of this have to do with then, because I think this is such an excellent point you make, you know, after stressors begin to build up over the years and the newness of the relationship has worn off, should we be aware of the fact that that is going to be part of the equation? And maybe that person who doesn't put that cap back on that toothpaste, that person who hasn't been putting the dirty underwear in the hamper, maybe we should start making some of those behavioral changes early in the game so that by the time stressors do build up, these kinds of things won't be part of those stressors?
Yeah, I would say this. If you find yourself getting angry at your spouse for not putting the cap back on the toothpaste, that's not what the real issue is. It's actually something else. A lot of times the real issues in relationships are things that we either aren't completely aware of or don't want to admit. And so instead of focusing on what the real issues in the relationship are, we focus on those petty little things. Now, that's why, you know, when you first got married, it didn't bother you that they didn't put the cap back on the toothpaste, because everything else was going just fine. And then once problems happen, and this is what's inevitable in relationships, is we're going to hurt each other.
Yes.
You just can't avoid that, okay? And so that's something you have to understand right from the start, is it's going to happen, and you need to know how to deal with it when you hurt your partner. And this is not even limited to romantic relationships. This is in all of our relationships, whether it's a family relationship or friendship or relationships at work. We're going to hurt each other, usually unintentionally, usually without being aware that we hurt the other person. But it's going to happen. And so we need to know how to fix relationships when we've caused that damage, rather than letting the resentment from that hurt kind of fester and grow and kind of spoil the relationship. We need to know how to kind of apply some first aid to the relationship so the hurt doesn't get even worse.
And so you mentioned, in fact, I like this quote that you share with us. You always hurt the one you love, the one you shouldn't hurt at all. Yes. Yeah. You always take the sweetest rose and crush it till the petals fall.
Yeah, that's an old song. But there's a lot of wisdom in that old song.
And that's what a lot of us find ourselves doing, whether intentionally or unintentionally.
Well, we all do. Unintentionally. I don't think the song means that we do it intentionally. Mm. I think it's sort of the self-awareness that even when I have the best of intentions, even when I love my partner and I don't want to hurt her, I'm going to hurt her. And I know that. And she's going to hurt me. It's inevitable because we're not perfect people. And so we have to face up to that. And actually, that's part of the scary thing I think you were talking about earlier about facing yourself.
Yes.
Is one of the things that we have to face is the fact that we're not perfect.
Mm. Mm. And it's so interesting, Dr. Ludden, that so often, and this is one of the reasons I like what you're saying, we are going to hurt each other. Because so often we can be self-centered about this, and our focus is so much me. And we're so quick to look at how our partner hurt us. And it's so easy for us to dismiss, if we ever pick up on it at all, on how we hurt our partner.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So,
I'm
sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
So we have this situation where the pain is going to be there because we're going to hurt each other. And you mentioned one of those huge words, resentment. Stuff come, you know, once we're hurt, we're going to feel a certain way and we're going to react a certain way. And some of the things that you talk about, some of those reactions can have to do with punishment. I'm sorry, with forgiveness, but it can also have to do with punishment. And when it comes to the punishment, you break that down into two types of justice.
Right, what we call retributive justice versus restorative justice. So this is kind of a general idea about how we go about responding when somebody has done something wrong. Retributive justice means that you're seeking revenge or seeking retribution, right, or trying to even the score. And a lot of us have that feeling, you know, that if somebody did us a wrong, that the only way to fix it is to punish them in some way, in order to get even or to teach them a lesson. Somebody cuts you off in traffic, and so you're honking your horn at them or driving really close to them to show them what it feels like. Those would be examples of retributive justice. In marriages, I think probably the most common form of retributive justice is the cold shoulder, where you just stop talking. All right, I'm going to show you how it feels. You hurt me, and I'm going to show you how it feels by not talking to you. I'm going to punish you that way to make you feel bad for what you did to me. That's a really dangerous thing to do in a relationship for a number of reasons. I think the first and foremost reason is when you give your spouse the cold shoulder, you have communicated to your spouse that you're upset, but you haven't communicated why you're upset. And so that leaves them to guess what it could possibly be. Either that or just dismiss it. Say, well, it's not my fault. I didn't do anything wrong. It's their problem. And it's that communication part, you know, that's missing there. So retributive justice kind of seeks to get even. And it kind of comes from the feeling that, you know, when a wrong has been committed, it needs to, you know, we need to balance it out with by making the other person suffer or, you know, something along those lines. But in the end, it doesn't really fix the problem. You know, your partner may or may not eventually figure out why you're angry at them. They may not really understand the full extent of how much it hurt you. It also sets up your partner for becoming defensive, and of course that's another you know, big signs that the relationship is in trouble is when one of the partners becomes defensive. So this retributive justice, in the long run, doesn't really help the situation. I think the real question here is, what are you trying to achieve when you feel a need to punish your spouse for something? So
and with the retributive justice, you said the goal is to just hurt back?
It's to hurt back, right. Okay. Yeah, and is it the goal of retributive justice is to hurt back with either the idea that I want to make you feel what I felt, or I need to get even with you, or oftentimes people say I'm going to teach them a lesson by hurting them the way that they hurt me.
Ladies and gentlemen, ever found yourself in that position? Retributive justice. Have you ever wanted to hurt back just for the sake of hurting back because your partner hurt you? That's part of it now. That's part of the way we sometimes respond, but there are other ways. Dr. Ludden has already mentioned forgiveness. We're going to move more into that as we continue the discussion, but we're also going to talk about the other side of justice that he has shared with us. We haven't gone into detail yet, and that is restorative justice. Stay with us. You're listening to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. I'm speaking with Dr. Ludden, and this is going to be the focus is going to be the power of forgiveness and justice, but the right kind of justice. We'll be right back.